As anyone of a certain age is well aware, a Ginsu knife can cut through a penny or a tin can. For these vivid memories, we can thank Barry Bescher, the father of the Ginsu knife.
The Ginsu can cut a slice of bread so thin you can almost see through it. It cuts meat better than an electric knife and goes through frozen food as though it were melted butter.
Bescher died recently, but in the pantheon of Schlockmeisters, he is an immortal. A pioneer of direct response TV advertising, he not only discovered a way to take kitchen knives manufactured in Ohio and make them seem like exotic miracles, he honed the middle-of-the-night Channel 57 sales techniques to a fine edge. Ginsu, according to Bescher's New York Times obit, has no meaning in Japanese, but just sounded good. And so did the magic words, but wait, there's more. The gimmickry, the impressive coinage-snipping demonstrations, and the seemingly endless bonus add-ons enriched Bescher and his partners, but also spawned an industry. A while back, erstwhile OTM producer Mike Vuolo dove into the world of television pitchmen. In memory of Barry Bescher, we replay it for you now.
Growing up in northern New Jersey in the 1970s and 80s, I would make regular trips down to Atlantic City with my family when school was out. There are certain sounds that stick out in my memory from those summers on the boardwalk. The ocean, of course. Seagulls screeching overhead just outside the Planters peanut store. The arcade. Oh yeah, and this guy.
There's no pumps, there's no motors, there's no batteries. It works direct from a bucket. Wash your car, your boat, your camper, your trailer.
That's Billy Mays pitching the amazing Washmatic, a portable cleaning system. If you weren't a professional pitchman, you might call it a 10-foot hose, a simple siphon with a one-way valve. It helps you save water.
One bucket to wash, one bucket to rinse.
Mays would set up on the boardwalk with a Washmatic and a minivan door and pitch that product all day. It earned him the nickname Bucket Billy. Mays says he learned from some of the best pitchmen we'll never know, guys selling everything from fishing gear to facial cream, and he counts himself among the last of the old mold. He even uses the jargon of the hard sell during conversation. You don't gather a crowd, you bally one. And it's not a crowd, it's a tip. Like a lot of pitchmen, Mays gets something close to reverential when he talks about what those in the industry call the turn.
All this so important turn. When you have that perfect pitch going, you better ask for the money. You better turn them right there because they're ready. They're ready to pull out the $20 right then and there. They already got it waving in the air. Sometimes that turn didn't always happen so quick. You had to go clap and bring them out of it. You're number one. You're number two. One thing you didn't want to happen, the front of your tip, break up and leave. You know, if you leave now, I'll never talk to you. Don't you dare do that right now. You kind of just force them to stay.
Mays pitched the Washmatic on the boardwalk, on the pier, and at state fairs for more than 10 years. It was in 1993 at the Pittsburgh Home and Garden Show that he met Max Apple, an amateur inventor who developed a citrus cleaner in his garage in Colorado. A few years later, Apple hired Mays to pitch the product, Orange Glow Wood Cleaner and Polish, on TV.
Made with pure orange oil. It cleans, polishes, and protects all the
Mays sold 6,000 bottles the first day, and then Apple expanded his business, with Mays again as the pitchman, to include something he called OxyClean.
It's powered by the air you breathe, activated by the water that you and I drink. In your laundry, the power of bleach, but it's safe. Watch this.
And ever since, late at night, early in the morning, whenever TV channels have cheap airtime to sell, Billy Mays has been coming into our homes.
Hi, Billy Mays here for Mighty Putty.
Hi, Billy Mays here for the Big City Slider Station.
Hi, Billy Mays here for the Steam Buddy.
Hi, Billy Mays here for the Jupiter Jack.
Hi, Billy Mays back again with the Awesome Auger.
Hi, Billy Mays here for the Toll Bandit.
Hi, Billy Mays here for the world's greatest insole, Impact Gel.
Why am I smashing my hand with this hammer? To show you the amazing protection you get from Impact Gel.
That last product, Impact Gel, in case you couldn't hear him, is featured in the first episode of Mays' new reality show on the Discovery Channel called Pitchmen. Billy Mays.
You know, if you ask me what I am right now, I am a pitchman. I only know how to do one thing, sell products. It was taboo at certain times during my career where we would call ourselves professional demonstrators. Now, I'm proud to say I, Billy Mays, am a pitchman. That's what I am.
I think it's a term that historically rises and falls.
Glenn Hinson is a folklorist at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He says that during the old medicine shows of the late 19th century, a pitchman would prefer to call himself a talker and to call his pitch a lecture.
The idea of a lecture was to somehow wrap the rhetoric of the remarkable in the framing of the familiar. You wanted to invite your audience, the tip, to think differently about what they needed in their lives so that the audience would reach into their pockets, pull out that dollar bill for that bottle of tonic, and make the purchase.
I'm going to paint a word picture that the smallest boy or girl in the audience can understand. Those of you that keep house, you have sitting at your back door what we call a slop bucket or a garbage can.
One medicine show doctor, Dr. Fred Bloodgood, he used to say that the credo of many of the med show talkers was never use one word when four would suffice.
I've been putting that same food into my stomach not for a day, not for a week, a month, or a year, but for 5 years, for 10 years, and I've never cleaned it out.
The first nail in the coffin of the old med shows was the Federal Food and Drugs Act of 1906. Its stated purpose was to prevent, quote, the manufacture, sale, or transportation of adulterated or misbranded or poisonous or deleterious foods, drugs, medicines, and liquors.
Something that would pass a tapeworm, head and all.
That put the medicine show on notice, and it eventually died out. Glenn Hinson.
In the history of medicine shows, if you look at those performers who went on from there, performers would move into vaudeville. They would move more particularly into places like the Grand Ole Opry. And in the Grand Ole Opry, where you have this idea of a radio show that combined pitches with entertainment, with the advent of television, it's a very simple move to make.
In the late 1940s, a guy named Nat Morris was hiring people, mostly his own family, to pitch products on the boardwalks of New Jersey. Nat Morris was the head of an extended family dynasty of pitchmen. In-laws, cousins, nephews. His own son, Arnold, was something of a pitching prodigy. You know that gimmick where some guy cuts through metal to demonstrate just how sharp the knife is? Arnold invented that 60 years ago.
This could be a chicken bone. It could be a ham bone, frozen food. This is steel against steel. Take a look at this. Something has to give. You see those filings over here? Now, there's only one way to find out if that knife is still razor sharp. You go back to the same tomato today, tonight, tomorrow, next week, next year, for the rest of your life, you never, ever have to sharpen a knife.
Between the years 1948 and 1954, the number of American households owning TV sets shot from less than 1% to more than 55%. It was during that time that the Morrises took the pitches they perfected on the boardwalks and filmed them as commercials. Modern-day medicine show talkers beamed right into our homes. They even shot half-hour spots, what we would now call infomercials, for the old Dumont network. They were disguised as cooking shows, but the whole point was to sell a Morris family product called the Roto-Broil, a rotisserie.
Hi, this is Lester Morris, the Roto-Magician, and here's our menu for today. Smorgasbord, Swedish meatballs, sill salad, and Scandifus casserole.
Remember I said extended family dynasty? The Morrises were related to the Popeels, who struck gold in the 1960s with a whole line of kitchen gadgets, the Veg-O-Matic, Dial-O-Matic, even a Whip-O-Matic, pushing the infomercial pitch so deep into our pop cultural psyche that Dan Aykroyd spoofed it on Saturday Night Live in 1976.
How many times has this happened to you? You have a bass. You're trying to find an exciting new way to prepare it for dinner. You could scale the bass, remove the bass's tail, head and bones, and serve the fish as you would any other fish dinner. But why bother now that you can use Robco's amazing new kitchen tool, the Super Bass-O-Matic 76?
Yes. If anyone could sell Aykroyd's Bass-O-Matic,
the tool that lets you use the whole bass.
Surely it would be Ron Popeil. Of the entire clan of Morrises and Popeils, some of the best salesmen America has ever seen, it is Ron who has been the most successful. It is Ron who has elevated the infomercial to its grand synthesis of theater and commerce. It is Ron who best put to practice the old pitchman's axiom. It's not what you sell, it's how you tell them the price.
You know you're not going to spend $400 for it, not $375 or $350, not $325 or even $300, not $275 or $250, not $225 or even $200 like you all may be thinking, not $190 or even $180. all you spend for this fabulous machine, an over $400 value, all you spend is just four easy monthly payments of $39.95.
They never tell you what the full price is because psychologists have done research on this and found that breaking things into smaller payments fools the human mind into thinking that it's really not the same thing.
Remy Stern is the author of But Wait, There's More, a book about the infomercial industry. He says another pitchman's ploy is to push the idea that time is running out, which he could do pretty convincingly on the boardwalk.
Usually he has more, probably in his truck about a block away. But the boxes that you'll see standing right next to him, there'll be a limited number, and he'll use that to his advantage to suggest that if you don't act now, you're not going to get this fantastic offer, which has since migrated to television, that same sense of creating this false scarcity.
False scarcity, though, is not as believable on TV. To reinforce the idea, then, an infomercial might use a counter to tick down the time. Sometimes there's a counter running up, tallying the number of items sold. This communicates what psychologists call social proof. If lots of other people are doing it, then you should too. And if you're not, what's wrong with you? Testimonials from people who are in a studio audience or may seem to be plucked randomly off the street serve a similar purpose.
I don't have to go to the store to buy a rotisserie chicken. I can make my own now, and it comes out just scrumptious. I love it.
Social proof is often built right into the structure of an infomercial, where the pitchman works with a host who is ever so incredulous at first. Remy Stern.
She'll usually start off the infomercial with questions like, I can't really believe it does this, Jack.
You can make pasta with the Popeil automatic pasta maker in under 3 minutes.
From scratch?
No.
From scratch?
From scratch.
She's proxy for the people at home who are saying the same thing, which is, I can't believe it does that. Over the course of the infomercial, you'll watch that her tone changes and she'll finally sort of succumb to the pitch and realize that this is the greatest machine she has ever seen.
It really is an exciting pasta maker, isn't it? I mean, the Popeil automatic pasta maker is sensational. Now, there's the 1-800 number on your screen. I don't know what you're waiting for. It can't get any better than this.
Near the end of an infomercial, a pitchman will make one last effort to hook you by upping what's called the perceived value of the deal.
In addition to that, you get a package of semolina flour. You also get a pasta fork. You get a measuring cup. You get $100 worth of coupons, as well as a recipe booklet with English and Spanish instructions.
When and how to ask for the money, false scarcity, social proof, perceived value.
Everybody that calls in the next 30 minutes will also receive absolutely free my new sausage-making attachment with spices and casings included.
Ron Popeil has turned the art of the infomercial into a science. And if Ron Popeil has brought the half-hour form to its apotheosis, a company called Telebrands has done the same for the short form, spots that are no longer than a minute or two in length. Telebrands is headquartered in Fairfield, New Jersey. Displayed in the lobby of the building are honest-to-goodness trophies for products like the Better Pasta Pot and the World's Safest Can Opener. There's even a letter from a professor of mechanical design at Princeton University thanking Telebrands founder A.J. Kubani for a lecture he gave titled Finding Winning Products. That's what they do at Telebrands.
A lot of people see these commercials on TV and they say something like, well, you know, if that blanket with sleeves can sell, then anything will sell on TV.
Telebrands president and CEO, A.J. Kubani.
Well, it's really not that simple. It's actually quite challenging to come up with a winning TV product. Even for us, we've been in the business for 26 years, and we still fail 90% of the time.
One of the first products Kubani advertised on TV was a pair of sunglasses in 1987.
Introducing AmberVision, the most amazing breakthrough in vision technology since glasses were invented.
He figured out that he could build brand recognition by blanketing the airwaves with cheap, direct-to-consumer commercials, and then take the product into retail stores where he slapped an as-seen-on-TV logo on them, which he designed himself. It's a very lucrative formula, he told me, so that's what he's been doing ever since. But Kubani says he has a few key requirements for any idea before Telebrands will even consider developing it into a product.
They all solve a common problem.
Are there places in your home where you wish you had a light, but you don't?
The other thing is that they have to be innovative, or at least perceived as being innovative.
Oh no, that tired old style's been around for a while. But now there's Easy Combs, the easy new way to create dozens of dazzling new hairstyles instantly.
They have to be easy to manufacture in mass. which means that they're usually low-tech.
Fed up with spending hundreds of dollars on purses that just get soiled by dirty floors? Then you need Purse Hook.
Ramping up high-tech products can take a long time, and we don't have that kind of time.
That's because the life cycle for a product, from the time it hits the air to the time it leaves the stores, can be as short as a few months. But every now and then, Telebrands comes up with a big seller that may linger for a few years. These are the products that pay the salaries of the 40 or so employees and have made Kubani a wealthy man. Maybe you've heard of the Ped Egg. That's P-E-D-E-G-G, Kubani.
It's a product that removes calluses or dead skin from the bottoms of people's feet. It works the same way that a cheese grater does, except it's better blades, and it catches the shaved calluses so it doesn't make a mess.
Last year, more than 20 million people bought the Ped Egg. When I think back to the boardwalk of Atlantic City, as much as I can remember even the voices of some of the pitchmen out there, I can't remember if we ever bought anything. Turns out we did.
I bought knives, I bought choppers, I bought a blender.
My mother, Bella Vuolo.
They had the gadgets that made fancy vegetables, which I bought and could never do when I brought it home. They made it look so easy. You know, they sliced the tomato with one sweep. No, never happened.
My mother even has a few gadgets still tucked away in her closet. They're just waiting to transform her kitchen and change her life.
This is the Vidalia Chop Wizard that I was telling you about. It does not do an onion as good as they say. It's faster and easier by hand. I have a quick chopper, which I don't think I ever used. It's good for chopping, but you're a pretty good chopper. Oh, another one. This is a mixer jug. As you can see, I never used this one either. Some of the things I never used, brought it home and said, why did I buy it? And some things I did use.
Why did you buy it?
He was a good pitch man.
Ron Popeil likes to tell a story about his cousin, who sold a number of gadgets on the Atlantic City boardwalk in the 1950s. This cousin of his was such a good pitch man that one customer stood there and bought every item he had, only to walk away with two big shopping bags and toss the whole lot of it into a trash can not far away. Maybe that story's true, maybe it isn't. But it was in the 1950s that television took notice of the lowly pitchman for his ability to sell and lifted him up off the boardwalks and the street corners. Television, you could say, saved the pitchman. If TV ad rates keep slipping and traditional advertising becomes a thing of the past, maybe it'll be the pitchman's turn to save TV. For On the Media, I'm Mike Vuolo.
I need a Vegematic. I need a pocket fisherman. I need a handy appliance that'll scramble an egg.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, TJ Vogt, Sara Abdurrahman, and Chris Neary, with more help from Amy DePiro and Eliza Novick-Smith. And edited this week by our senior producer, Katya Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Andrew Dunn. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Bob Garfield.